build a house without a foundation? Would you have a child and not name it? Would you let a stranger squat on your property? No, of course not. So why should the internet be any different? Every week, speak with top domain experts. Learn how to make money with domains. Know your legal rights. Each week, join our expert host to be master of your domain. Right here on Domain Masters.
Hello, everybody. It's Monty Khan. Welcome to Domain Masters. Glad to have you on this week. We're waiting for some more people to get into the chat room. If you have not logged in yet, please go to Webmaster Radio and log in to the chat room so we can have some conversation there. What a week we had last week. We were in wonderful Las Vegas. We bought Mama a new pair of shoes. Didn't lose too much. We were there for Internext and CES and got a lot of business done and had a great show last week. Ron Jackson was on live last week. We talked about the 2004 year. It was a great year from a domain standpoint. Kicked off by Webfather selling men.com right before the turn of the year last year and set the sights for a great year in 2004. PPC payments went up for everybody. Everybody started monetizing their domain names. We had some great domain sales to report. We participated in a lot of big sales as well, and so we expect 2005 to be a great year to come. And today on the show, we have Steven Lieberman, who is with Greenberg and Lieberman in Maryland. It's a pretty well-known patent and trademark law firm. They do specialize in patent and trademark law and also domain law. He's got a pretty famous case to talk about today involving the domain name Kiwi.com. And we had such a successful show with John Berryhill a few weeks ago, actually on our show opener, that we decided that we're going to have legal specialists in the industry on a regular basis to talk about various issues regarding domain law so that everybody can protect their assets and know what's going on with the current ICANN regulations, what's going on in domain law and property protection, and try to give as many tips as possible on protecting assets, on strategies to keep those assets safe as we want to monetize those domain names in the future. So Steven will be on in a little bit. We're going to talk at length with him and answer any questions that anybody has on in the chat room. And next week we're going to have a great show as well. I'll have Howard New from New Law on the show and probably Richard Lau, who started an ICANN accredited registrar several years ago and my domains sometime before that, so he'll be a great guest as well. So we're going to break for a commercial and pay some bills, and we'll be right back in a couple minutes with Steven Lieberman. Take a few minutes out and have a cup of coffee and come on back. Bye.
Merchants offer your customers a billing solution with zero chargeback risk. Introducing DuoCash.
DuoCash.
And the revolutionary card that's just like using cash on the net.
No credit card or bank account required.
DuoCash is available wherever prepaid calling cards are sold
or online at DuoCash.com.
So ensure your customers' online experience anywhere they see PayByCash.com or DuoCash.
And don't leave money on the table.
Sign up with DuoCash, the official prepaid shopping card of the internet.
DuoCash.
Attention webmasters, wish you could convert more web traffic into cash? No need to rub a lamp. Just click on genienose.com. Install a co-branded search box on your site or incorporate paid listings XML into search results. And at your command, genienose.com pays cash for each result your users click on. Enjoy prompt payment and superior customer service. Earn even more through our co-branded referral program. Genie knows how to deliver results.
GenieKnows.com. Proud sponsor of the Webmaster World.
A rose by any other name would still be the same.
Move over, Shakespeare. You need to differentiate yourself from your competition. Do it by aligning yourself with a company who has earned the trust of Jupiter Media, the NHL, and Lionsgate Films, among others. Moniker.com is the most secure ICANN-accredited register on the planet, offering you domain registration, hosting, domain sales, and acquisition services. Wrap that up with 24/7 support. That's your winning combination, MONIKER.com. More than a name.
Commercials off. Now back to
Domain Masters.
And we're back.
Okay, so welcome back to Domain Masters. I want to welcome our first guest, actually our only guest tonight, Stephen Lieberman. Again, Stephen is a trademark and attorney up in a trademark attorney and domain attorney specialist up in Maryland. Welcome, Stephen.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Not so bad.
Yeah, and I heard you just got back from a 3-week vacation in Cabo.
Don't tell anyone.
Oh, that was supposed to be a secret?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, okay, okay.
Everyone's supposed to think I'm working hard at all times.
Okay, okay. Well, I heard because Sammy Hagar called me and said you drink all this Cabo Wabo down there.
Well, that might have been true.
So how are you on tequila, to be honest?
Well, I drink it and I fall down, so I guess I'm pretty good on it.
That's good. That's good. Well, welcome to Domain Masters. For those of you that don't know, I've been working with Stephen for quite some time. We manage a couple of his clients, and we have had a great relationship over the last couple of years, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about your specialty in terms of your legal specialty, and then let's talk a little bit about this this great decision that that just happened for you guys.
Our office is Greenberg and Lieberman, do patents, trademarks, and copyrights. We've been around for a little longer than a decade. My partner, Michael Greenberg, is focused mostly on the patents. I'm focused mostly on the trademarks and the litigation. We have another attorney, Deborah McCormick, who does exclusively the litigation. We've done a lot of litigation in the area of domains, particularly because one of the client that we both know, and who was the owner of the domain that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes.
Yeah.
We've been doing an awful lot of trademark litigation, specifically in Virginia and Maryland, and been quite successful along the way.
Now your clients are also, you know, the very international as well, is that correct?
We have clients from Kuwait, Iraq, Israel, England, China, literally all over the world. We've done patent filings in almost every single country in the world and trademark filings in 40 or 50 countries.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. How do you think you've drawn such an international client base like that?
One, we know a lot of people from around the world. Two, we have focused on advertising on the Internet for probably longer than most of the other law firms out there.
What a great idea.
It's the way things to come and the way things have been actually for a long, long time. You see it building every single year. At this point, we exclusively get new clients from the Internet. We do no other form of advertising. You'll find maybe one or two Yellow Book advertising pieces of advertising that are left out there, but they're all old books. We gave up on anything other than the Internet. And in all honesty, the people that are on the Internet tend to be better educated and more capable of understanding what's necessary and why you need intellectual property protection.
Right, right. And the type of, just curious, because we talk a lot about this on the previous shows, and we're going to be talking a lot of it on shows to come with the whole, you know, pay-per-click advertising. What kind of advertising has been the most successful for you and your law firm?
Actually, we've done mostly pay-per-click. The second is we do have acquired a large number of domains and use that to create traffic to our website. We have about 20 different websites and use them to, by putting content up, give people a reason to come to the websites and, of course, have our own advertising on each one of those sites.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So moving into one of the key decisions that you've just recently had, and I'd like you to really go into detail about this decision and why you feel it's so important for the industry, for domain holders, because a lot of it has to do with what one calls a generic domain name and the various rules and regulations about what's generic and what's not. And it's pretty relevant because everybody has that question. You know, I have this domain name, you know, it's generic. However, you know, it may have a trademark in some other form in use. And, you know, based off of your experience in this decision, you know, tell me about the significance of this decision and how it impacts our industry a little bit.
The domain name we're talking about is kiwi.com.
So kiwi as in the fruit.
Kiwi as in the fruit or as in the bird or as in maybe
right.
Many other things that are out there. The domain name itself is obviously generic. Yet the complainant in this case had numerous trademarks for the word kiwi in lots of countries around the world. What I think is significant, I mean, there's been a lot of cases where complaints have been turned down. What I think is significant about this case, as opposed to other cases, is that the board specifically found that the complaint was brought in bad faith. That hasn't happened an awful lot. They did that because the complainant was attempting to use the WIPO board to push someone else around, because we were talking about the complainant has lots of money and had the ability to, without even thinking about it, to go ahead and file this. It wasn't anything that mattered to them.
Right, right.
And basically what happened is the board spanked them. They said, you know, this is ridiculous. You had no evidence of any sort, and you just filed this in order to make us work. And you have no possible basis for having any rights to this domain. And that's really the key point. Just as you have a trademark on something doesn't mean that you have the right to the domain name.
Exactly. That's what a lot of people confuse in our industry. We talked a little bit about that with John Berryhill on the first show, is that there's a lot of questions about the registration of a domain name compared to a trademark. What if you registered a trade, you know, the domain name prior to a trademark being filed? Who really has the law, the rights? Is it common law rights? Is it real trademark rights? You know, what it is.
Well, I mean, the key thing to remember is that no person, no entity anywhere in the world has what we call a right in gross to a trademark. Or in this case, right in gross to a word. And what that means is that lots of people can use the same word for different businesses.
Right.
For instance, they can have the word kiwi and use it for shoe polish, and we can have kiwi and use it for pay-per-click advertising or search engine.
Right. Now, in this case, the Kiwi group, the complainant was representing what industry?
Well, it's just what I said, actually.
The shoe polish.
They had shoe polish.
Right, right. And everybody's seen Kiwi shoe polish. It's the little black portable containers that you see at the shoe stores that you can buy right off the shelf and bring home with you into your own shoes.
Right.
Basically, yeah.
That's it. And even a step beyond that, trademarks and trademark rights are based upon first state rights, then national rights. So, for example, in the United States, you could use the mark blah in, say, Maryland, and I could, you'd use it in Florida, and I could use the word blah in Maryland, and as long as neither of us are going outside of our
state boundaries,
we have no rights or can't say anything to each other, even if we're using it for the exact same goods and services. The moment one of us goes across state lines, let's say you use the word blah for selling chairs across state lines before I went and started using the name to sell chairs, then you would have rights because you're in interstate commerce, but that only gives you rights across the United States. Let's say someone else has the domain name blah.com, which I assume is a good domain, in, I don't know, China, and they're also selling chairs. They have an absolute right to that domain name, even though they're using the same goods and services, and even though you have national rights.
Right.
So you really got to separate it by each country and separate it by the states based upon when each person comes in. And reality is whoever uses it first, allowing for those prior rules, has the rights.
Right, right. The definition of common law trademark then is, in this particular case regarding domain name, is one, establish a common law trademark if they've registered and have a definition of use of a domain name prior to someone else filing a trademark online, or?
There's no requirement for registration. Common law rights come from your common use.
So as long as you've used an idea or a mark, and you can prove the use of that mark ahead of even a trademark filing, you would have common law trademark.
That is correct. I mean, in fact...
And you could defend those rights in court as if you were the trademark holder.
That is correct.
I see.
You don't get particularly more rights from filing a trademark than you had under common law, other than some statutory rights and the ability to say that, you know, this is yours and putting everyone on notice, which are basically statutory rights. You can also get some ability to get more damages, among other things.
Okay. Hey, Stephen, we just got a message that we need to break for a little commercial, and also I think we're going to try to get your phone line a little bit louder as well.
Okay.
So we're gonna break just for a minute. We'll be right back with Domain Masters. Just please hold on for a minute.
Are you ready to optimize your website's full potential? Well, it's all about positioning. Trusted by search engines for delivering clean and optimized content pages for customers. The trusted feeds industry pioneers at Position Technologies will help you build a solid foundation for creating long-term impact on you and your customers' bottom line. So visit PositionTechnologies.com today and look forward to achieving new heights within the search engines.
Over 4,000 clients around the world are utilizing effective content-based solutions from InfoSearch Media. With the expertise of over 200 professional copywriters to work for you. Studies show that the number one factor visitors consider before making a purchase online is trust. And nothing creates more trust and loyalty than well-written, informative content. High-quality content also generates free search engine traffic. Content is definitely king. Visit InfoSearchMedia.com today.
More and more women are experiencing amazing pleasures, enjoying Playful Chocolates from PlayfulCash.com. All-natural gourmet Colombian treats that are simply sinful. As a PlayfulCash.com affiliate, you'll enjoy weekly payouts up to 50% on all sales of these trademarked and patented products. Multiple payout options, 5% referral fees, and private labeling available. Isn't life sweet when Playful is highly profitable? For more money-making info, visit PlayfulCash.com today.
Commercials off. Now back to
Domain Masters.
Hello, folks. We're back. Welcome to Domain Masters. We broke for a little commercial and fixed, I think, a phone line. Steven, you back on?
I'm back on.
Oh, you sound a lot better now. Great. So we were just talking a little bit about common law trademark. In case people didn't hear the first part of your conversation, what we were discussing was what makes a common law trademark, or what the misperception is possibly to people that once you have a use of a mark or an idea that you may not have, that someone that has a filed trademark may not have more power than you do. You actually could have more power over them. And maybe you can talk a little bit about the significance of that.
Well, I mean, it comes down to your rights. If you're using a mark and you've been using it, say, for 50 years, and let's say you've been using it in interstate commerce, within your area that you have actually done sales, you're going to have greater rights than somebody who just came in and started using it and has a registered trademark. If it's close enough, one of the things you can always do is go before the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, TTAB, and move or file a petition to cancel their trademark.
Right.
Just as somebody has managed to get a trademark application through the trademark office doesn't mean they have absolute rights to it.
Right, right. So by filing a trademark, and first of all, you can't file a trademark for a .com name anyway. You have to file a proper name.
You can, except the .com is automatically disclaimed.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay. There is one caveat to that. Let's say somebody turns around and files a trademark, and you've been using it for 50 years. They don't contact you immediately. They don't know about you. 5 years go by. They can, after that 5-year mark, file something called their letters of incontestability. At that point, their mark can't be canceled unless you can show that their mark has become generic for the goods and services that they are selling, which is an almost impossible thing. There's very few examples of that. One of them is like Kleenex. Other than that, you always can go back and try and cancel somebody's mark.
Right, right.
Okay.
Now, see, we got a question online here from I Like Info. As you said, it's easy to prove. Just go to USPTO. How easy is it to prove trademark to the UDRP panel? Not the act, but they're buying into it.
The UDRP panel has been very, very good. You give them a copy of a registered trademark with any government And I don't mean state government, because state marks don't count. But with any federal government, and they've always seemed to accept it. They don't even require that it be a certified registration.
I see. I see. So this decision on Kiwi, now, this was a, was it a an overwhelming decision in your favor?
It was overwhelming in our favor, which is, you know, rather nice. They said, you know, they went down the list. You know, it's required that you go through the list when they discuss it. Is it identical or confusingly similar? And obviously the answer there is yes, Kiwi and Kiwi are exactly the same. Then they, the complainant has to argue that there are no rights or legitimate interests of the respondent, the person who's defending. And they said, you know, somebody who's using it for a search engine or pay-per-click for a business purpose has rights or legitimate interests. And that's obviously a good thing, especially for the pay-per-click people, because oftentimes people have argued, oh, no, you don't have any legitimate interest. You're using it just because to make money, and while you're making money off, these people are looking for me. And they've basically said, no, this is legitimate interest. After that, the complainant argued that that it was registered and used in bad faith because, of course, everybody knows about them. Well, the standard is a little bit higher than that. You can't just say, of course, everybody knows about us. Under the trademark terms, there's such a thing as famous, and there's a few marks out there that if they had proven within a country that their mark was famous, then they could possibly say that. I mean, in this case, Kiwi is certainly not famous.
Right.
A good example of a famous mark might be McDonald's, Nike, things like that.
Right, right.
And they said, you know, there's of course you knew about us is not sufficient for showing that it was registered in bad faith. And on that basis, they denied the complaint. And then they turned around and went one step further and said, you know, you had no basis for filing this, and what you did here was an abuse of the policy and therefore reverse domain name hijacking, which means that if they turn around and go file again,
that note's going to be in there.
Right.
Wow. And these decisions are important because of the precedents that set. You know, as we're
yes and no. They're important for precedents before WIPO. They're not important for precedents
in trademark law, like federal trademark law.
In federal court, everything. If this was brought to federal court, the decision would be de novo. It would be a full review. Now, obviously, we could take this wonderful document that was written by these three wonderful panelists, and I guess I'm prejudiced towards these panelists at this point, and show the court, look, they already lost once, they're trying again, here's the reasons why they lost.
Right. Right. So in a federal court, the WIPO decisions, the UDRP decisions cannot be used as like a precedence at all.
There are no precedents whatsoever.
No precedents whatsoever.
Right.
Do you see that ever changing?
I do not see that changing. What I do see happening, and what we've been trying to do with a lot of our clients, some of our clients have substantial amounts of cash and don't mind going to federal court on a regular basis, is we've been taking WIPO cases and citing them in federal court and trying to convince federal courts to put their imprimatur on them. And when a federal court does that, now it has real precedence in a federal court.
Right, right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. Now, you have some really good tips on how to protect yourself if going, you know, into the domain industry. You know, some things that people should look to, or if you're already in the industry that maybe people aren't covering. And I see a couple in here that I didn't even know about, and I've been in the industry for quite some time. So
I consider you the old man of the industry.
Well, not the oldest, but not web father old, but pretty, I don't know, since 1996. So
you've been around.
Been around for a while, but these are some pretty good points that I think everybody will get some value out of. So why don't you go over each one and explain some of the benefits around each one?
Okay. I mean, some of them are pretty obvious. You know, be careful. Don't buy non-generic domains of big companies. If you turn around and you buy Nike.com, if Nike is stupid enough, which I doubt they'll ever be, to let their domain drop, don't buy it, or if you do buy it, immediately transfer it back to them. Because, one, they've got lots of money, and two, they're already a famous company that has registered trademarks in, I think, every single country in the world. If they don't, I'd be really surprised. And if everyone knows these things, you know, you're just asking for it. I saw up on one of the websites, I was perusing them, that Martindale-Hubbell.com was for sale. And obviously nobody should ever buy that, because Martindale Hubbell is famous and, you know, certainly all over Europe and certainly in the United States, that there's no way they would ever lose a lawsuit pertaining to that.
Right.
Makes perfect sense. Two, you know, everyone in the industry turns around and they're selling domain names and they're using domains for lots of different purposes. And what I've noticed enormously is that many of them don't have any contracts whatsoever. Oh, here's the domain. Oh, here we're going to do this, and it's maybe a two-line contract that they're going to pay them something like that. Or they just go ahead and they turn around and say, all right, I'll transfer it to you, and maybe they'll use escrow.com to transfer it, but other than that, there's not going to be a contract. That's pretty foolish. You should actually get somebody to say, you know, I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't stolen this domain, let's say, if you're selling domains.
Now, when you're referring to clients, you're saying that, when you're saying have good contracts that protect you from your clients, are you talking about, let's say, you're a company and you want to protect, like, your affiliates?
Right.
Protect yourself from your affiliates.
You want to protect everyone that's associated with you.
Right.
If you have affiliates, obviously you don't want your affiliates getting into lawsuits, because that's just going to hurt you.
Right, right. That's right.
So protect them. Get an attorney to write up a good contract for them to use. You want to have a good contract with your affiliates. You want to have a limitation of damages across the board. That if somebody, you know, if there's, I mean, there's the problem here is I can't say what business someone's in, because obviously it's every source of business that's possible. There's people with content on their web pages, and there's people that don't have content. There's people that are doing PPC, and there's people that have affiliates, and there's people that good example, Cedo, which they do a resale of domains.
Mm-hmm.
From every single direction, somebody, whenever something is done and money is transferred, you really want to have a contract that's going to protect you and that's going to be molded for that particular situation.
Okay.
It just makes perfect sense. You always want to have a limitation on damages no matter what, and you always want to put in what, you know, jurisdiction and venue that this thing can be done. And I always like to turn in, unless your client or you have unlimited money and you don't mind going to court, put in arbitration clauses in there so that, you know, you're not going to get dragged into court and lose 10 times the amount that you could possibly have made. What else? Obviously, and I didn't put this down on the list, along the way, different countries have very different laws.
Right. A lot of people ask questions about world trademark law, if there's such a thing. And we talked a little bit about that. We briefly covered, you know, how you're protected in state boundaries and then federal boundaries. But like you said, what happens when you're across the pond?
Well, there is world trademark law from the point of view in that every single federal country has their own trademark law. There's a book called Trademarks Around the World, which actually lists them out to a great degree. A lot of the countries' trademark laws are very similar, and some of them are not very similar. However, when it comes right down to it, your rights usually start with your use. If you're the first one that was using the name, then you have particular rights to it. On the other hand, if there's a big company in that country that's been using it for many, many, many years, and they might be, and then you should probably think twice about getting the domain.
Right.
You know, and once again, this is a case by case basis. There is, I was talking to a guy earlier today, and he said that he's been in the domain industry for 9 years, and that he's never been in a lawsuit of any sort because he researches every single domain. Well, that's
right.
Just basic intelligence.
Right, right. Hey, let me pop a couple questions at you before we go into the other points, because they're popping up on the forum.
Go for it.
a better mall asks, if you register a domain name that violates a trademark, is your risk limited to having having to hand over the domain name, or can a company, you know, sue you for damages? And obviously, in a UDRP case, it's much different than in a federal trademark case.
Yes. Under UDRP, the only thing you risk is losing the domain. In federal and state court, they can make an argument that you have acted in bad faith. The same basic argument that's done under UDRP, but that you were acting...
But with damages, like you did damage to me, you prevented me from making money, or you damaged my brand and mark in some way by using...
Well, they can ask for money. Damages under trademark law are rare. It has to be a special case. That you, for instance, let's say somebody managed to get McDonald's, registered McDonald's2.com or McDonald's Big Mac Burgers.com and started making money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that person obviously knew what they were doing. And let's say they actually were selling hamburgers, but they're selling second-rate meat.
Right.
You know, argument, they could do it. They could sell it over the Internet. They could sell it frozen. That's a case where somebody could possibly get, where McDonald's could possibly get actual damages because they've harmed them in some, you know, actual way. They've derided their trademark, and possibly they might get sued for this bad meat that went out there. Maybe somebody could get sick or something like that. 90% of the time, you're only going to get have to turn over the domain. It's that 10% where the company is able to show that you've acted in bad faith. Now, understand, if you look at all the different statutes, like the cyber squatting statute, there's a substantial amount in there that has actual monetary damages in there. And I can guarantee that a large company with a lot of money and attorneys is going to try and get money out of you.
Right.
And if you don't have the ability to defend, well, then they're going to win because you won't be able to actually say, no, that's not right. A standard trademark case is going to cost $75,000.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, in federal court. And it can go a lot higher.
Yeah, I remember I defended, I've defended myself. Well, I mean, I had a lawyer defend myself, but I forget which company was. I can't remember the domain name at the time. It was a long time ago. It was like 1997, and I got pulled into back then they didn't have a UDRP board or a WIPO board. It was trademark law, and I had, network engineer. It was some kind of network engineer name, and one of the large companies that used this network engineer name or whatever sued like hundreds of people with any kind of domain name with the variation of network engineer, and they strong-armed, you know, basically by putting a big lawsuit out to numerous parties all at one time, spending thousands and thousands of dollars even to get out of that thing, even though I felt I could fight it and I was right and all that. It cost me something like, I don't know, $18,000 or $19,000 at the time. It was very, very expensive just to close it up, not even to go to court. It was so expensive.
that's unfortunately the way it is. People, unfortunately, might makes right often within in the industry. Although I should note that company that did that did something very, very wrong. That was an abuse of the court system. And
yeah,
you know what should have happened is everyone who they sued should have banded together to fight them as a class action suit against them.
Right. Let me pop one more question at you. I like info asked the forums lead me to believe that UDRP tends to be biased against individuals, non-trademark holders. So my question is, does the lawyer feel this way in general? Do they think it's generally fair, etc.?
That's a hard question. I have no proof of any sort that they're biased. On the other hand, if somebody is coming in as a company that's been relying on a domain, on a trademark for many, many years, a lot of these people who are making the decisions are attorneys who've been working for corporations for many years. They're going to say, well, it's just not fair. It's not fair for them to say it's just not fair. And I think if you actually looked at the weight of all the different WIPO decisions, probably they would tend towards going towards the corporation. But I honestly think that all of those panelists are trying to do what's right.
How do you feel about it, though, as a lawyer?
That's really not a fair question because, one, I have lots of clients who are large corporations, and I have lots of clients who are single people. I've seen it go in both directions. I really can't give you an absolute answer. My only answer for that is I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Another question. If I register FordSucks.com to put up an anti-Ford site, could Ford sue me for damages?
They could, but they're probably going to lose. The suck sites are very well known, and it's settled law, at least within the United States.
More freedom of speech type.
Right. It's political speech, and you're putting up information about how you believe Ford sucks. Well, then you're going to be fine, so long as you tell the truth. Don't ever put up a Ford sucks site and then start telling lies about them. If you put something up, make sure that you actually have evidence or proof that what you're putting up. The only one of the things I always tell people is, well, you know, why don't you go file suit against them and then put a copy of the complaint up there, because they can't get you no matter what for what you say in a complaint that's been filed in a court.
Right. Okay. All right. That's good. At least we're covering some of the questions on the chat. Let's get back to a couple of the points. I think we were on.
Well, one of the things I always tell people along the way is, and it goes back to the might makes right thing. You know, if you're in this industry, consider getting litigation insurance.
You know, what's that entail? What's litigation insurance entail?
You go to an insurance company, and there's lots of them out there, as we all know. Some of them offer litigation insurance, and some don't. Defensive litigation insurance is inexpensive. Usually, it's for $100,000, you're going to probably pay about $1,500 a year. And if you get sued based upon the standard is trademarks, if you get sued for trademark infringement, then they pay for it up to $100,000.
Oh, wow, that's great.
I don't know why everyone in the domain industry doesn't have it. It just doesn't make any logical sense.
And some of the any insurance, what are some of the insurance companies that provide that insurance?
I could look one of some of them up on our next commercial.
Okay, great.
It just makes logical sense. Obviously, you can dump a lot more money into litigation.
It's about $1,500 a year?
Say that again?
You said it was about $1,500 a year?
For $100,000 worth of litigation insurance.
Right. Pertaining to any type of litigation or just trademark?
I've only looked up trademarks, but I know they do patents. I know they do copyrights. I know they do offensive litigation insurance also, whereas, you know, you see somebody infringing on your patent or your trademark, and they'll pay for the litigation. I've never asked the cost, but I suspect that the costs are substantially higher because you have the ability to point at somebody saying, yeah, I think we're going to sue them. And therefore, then the insurance company would have to pay.
There's a couple questions coming in. I think it's $1,500 a year, and the type of insurance is called litigation insurance.
Right.
That's the exact name, correct?
That's what it is. Yeah.
That's what it is, litigation insurance. Okay. And it's $1,500 a year.
I think that, well, that's the quote. Last time I got a quote, that's what it was.
But, right.
You know, obviously, every insurance company is going to charge what they charge. Obviously, if you've already got something going on, they probably won't give you litigation insurance because there will be a pre-existing condition.
Right. And do they check, like, so insurance companies check, you know, things that maybe your record of how many times you've been in court in litigation? Do they pre-screen you for that?
I'm sure they do. I know they ask a bunch of questions.
Okay, cool.
Pertaining to it. And it's the usual and most obvious stuff that you expect. I mean, they're just like any other insurance company in the world. They're in it to make money, and they're going to make a bet as to, you know, what's the chances that you're going to get into litigation, and based upon that, they're going to charge you accordingly. You know, if you've been in 40 car accidents, I think your car insurance is going to be a lot higher.
All right. You know? All right. Now, this fourth point, about the dual corporations. That's one of the points that I've never heard before.
It's something that I always like to do. Whenever I set up systems, I usually like to set up multiple corporations, where you have one corporation that's going to own a lot of the actual assets. For instance, since we're talking about domains, you put all the domains in one corporation, and then you turn around and you license it to a second corporation. As long as you treat both corporations as really separate corporations, with a licensing agreement and a certain amount of money coming from that licensing agreement, and no commingling of funds, if somebody turns around and says, all right, I'm going to sue this company that's using this domain, well, then they're going to be suing a company with no assets.
Right, right.
You know, yeah, it's possible to lose, and these things happen, but then they're not going to be able to get anything for their loss. They're going to be going after an empty bucket. Now, obviously, they're going to try and pierce the corporate veil, but one, that makes things an awful lot harder. And two, if you've done your homework and acted according to the standard corporate laws, it's going to be very hard for them to do so, because you're going to say, you know, they're different corporations. This corporation owns all the assets, and that corporation is using them accordingly.
Okay.
And the corporation that owns the domains, well, it hasn't done anything wrong. It hasn't used the domains in any way whatsoever.
Right. All right. So that's a really good strategy.
It seems
to
work.
And you set this up for your clients?
Most of them.
Okay, great. Well, we'll definitely give your email address and some more information about that as well. I think what we're going to do is break for another commercial here coming up. Guru, you're with me. And when we get back, Stephen, if you can get a link or two for anybody that offers that litigation insurance, that would be great.
I'm looking right now.
And tell me what it is when we get back.
Okay.
Okay.
Unlock the adventure. Your key to the hottest games on the net. From Ultima Online to Dark Age of Camelot is here. Introducing DuoCash.
DuoCash.
Available wherever prepaid calling cards are sold or online at DuoCash.com. Enjoy instant access to the ultimate internet gaming excitement. Anywhere you see PayByCash.com or DuoCash. No credit card or bank account required. Game merchants and webmasters, get your game on. Don't leave money on the table. Accept DuoCash. Sign up today for the official prepaid game card of the internet.
Attention webmasters, wish you could convert more web traffic into cash? No need to rub a lamp. Just click on genieknows.com. Install a co-branded search box on your site or incorporate paid listings XML into search results. And at your command, genieknows.com pays cash for each result your users click on. Enjoy prompt payment and superior customer service. Earn even more through our co-branded referral program. Genie knows how to deliver results.
GenieKnows.com. Sponsor of the Webmaster World.
Over 4,000 clients around the world are utilizing effective content-based solutions from InfoSearch Media. With the expertise of over 200 professional copywriters to work for you. Studies show that the number one factor visitors consider before making a purchase online is trust. And nothing creates more trust and loyalty than well-written, informative content. High-quality content also generates free search engine traffic. Content is definitely king. Visit InfoSearchMedia.com today.
Commercials off. Now back to
Domain Masters.
Back to Domain Masters. A lot of questions coming up on the on both of the chat rooms, so I'm going to try and get some of those answered. Stephen, were you able to find what site?
I found one of the companies that I know about, and I'm going to give it to you, but this I'm not saying they're better than any other company.
No, that's understandable.
There.
Just one as an example, and maybe we can do some research and post some more later on in the week or whatever. Or if anybody wants to send you an email or me an email, we can get that.
Right. Infringines. infringines.com.
That's infringines.
GEINS.com. Right.
And they have litigation. I'm just putting it on the board here. On litigation.
Right. Insurance. They're calling it intellectual property insurance services.
Okay, great.
And, you know, that's one of probably a million insurance companies out there.
Right. Oh, no, I'm sure. And we'll try and get some more, and I'll have some people email you and stuff, because I'm sure they want to do that. People were asking about the dual corporation setup. What does that typically cost to do something like that?
You're probably talking about $1,800 to $2,500, depending on it. I mean, remember, that's just one way of doing things. There's a lot of other things. If things get more complicated, you can use four or five corporations. It completely depends on if you have employees or if you don't have employees. It depends how much intellectual property you have, mm-hmm. how many domains you have, how things should be cut up. Once again, it's you're going to deal with this on a case-by-case basis. Usually you're talking about $900 per corporation you're setting up. So you're probably talking about two corporate setup, and you're probably setting up a couple of licensing agreements between them.
Oh, okay. So that's what the extra expense is for.
Right.
And, you know, you can go and set up your own corporation, I guess, for, you know, $150 or $200. But this is going to be a little bit more complicated because you're basically licensing from one to the other, and the agreements you have to put together in order to do that, right?
Right. I mean, in all honesty, people have come to me with multiple corporations that I set up and said, just set up these licensing agreements for me.
Oh, okay. Great. Great.
You know, but, you know, that's the point. You do it yourself, obviously, it's a lot less expensive.
Right. Okay, and now number five, try to be reasonable.
I know, it's the stupidest suggestion there is, and yet in some ways it makes the most sense. Everyone's out there to make money. And you're gonna, what all of this comes down to is negotiations. No one wants to be taken, and nobody really wants to get into a lawsuit. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, my job is to stop people from getting into lawsuits or to get them out of them as inexpensively as possible. Somebody comes up and they say, you know, I'm going to file suit against you unless you give me this domain for free. Well, they're not being reasonable. You obviously have invested in the domain. You turn around and say, you know, this domain is important to me, but it's not important to me to the point of spending $100,000 on litigation. Why don't you give me $10,000 and I'll go away? Something like that. I mean, this is a negotiation process. Don't try and hold people up.
Right.
Not only is it unreasonable, but
you can
wrong.
Piss them off.
Yeah, it pisses them off. And once people are pissed off and in a lawsuit, there's no ending it, even if you get to a reasonable settlement.
All right. That's a good point, and you're right. It's such a simple thing, but people sometimes get so tied up, and you can't see the forest through the trees sometimes,
right,
when you get tied up in this type of stuff.
We're all in this for business and to make a living, and nobody really needs to be sitting there screaming at somebody across a desk or running into court or spending money on attorneys when it's just not necessary.
All right. And your other point.
My sixth point pertains to trademarks. If you've got a really important domain, then use the domain as much as possible and get a trademark for that use. Trademarks are not that expensive.
Talk about the expense a little bit, just so people realize what it costs to file and, you know, the wait time and all that stuff. I remember when we did it for Moniker, I think we had to wait 6 months for our trademark to be approved, and I can't recall how much it was to pay for it, but... Give us an idea.
You're talking, if you're using an attorney, the application is going to cost you about $835, which isn't that much. The government filing fees are a lot less than that. We charge $500 for our fees, which is really only an hour and a half worth of work.
Expensive date.
Yeah, absolutely.
but you're good at what you do.
I like to think so. you can even file for state trademarks. State trademarks don't help you when it comes to WIPO, but they help you everywhere else. WIPO really doesn't accept state trademarks as being valid because they're not reviewed. Oftentimes you can get a state trademark that is one syllable different from someone else's.
Right.
So they're mainly concerned, or they're the thing that brings a lot of weight with the, you know, with the bat, a heavy bat, is a federal trademark in that case.
Absolutely. And don't think just U.S. I mean, there's Benelux trademarks, there's community trademarks, and there's trademarks for just about every single country in the world. And in all honesty, if you turn around and you start looking at some of the countries around the world where, you know, their money's worth an awful lot less, you're going to get a trademark very inexpensively. And in this day and age of the internet, you know, go to Eastern Europe, go to Africa. It doesn't really matter. You've got a federal trademark. It gives you some validity before the WIPO board.
Okay, so in a WIPO case, having a federal trademark, even in an international UDRP claim, it carries some weight.
Absolutely.
And if you're... And what is the best trademark that can cover you, or what's the best way to cover yourself internationally then? Like if you want to protect your world intellectual property rights on a domain name, what would you recommend?
I'd recommend getting a community trademark.
A community trademark. How does one go about filing for a community trademark?
Say that again?
How does one go about getting that?
Most of the time you're going to pick up the phone and call your attorney. It is possible to do it without an attorney. It's tough. They're pretty complicated. We charge $3,500 to get a community trademark, and that's about average.
Okay. And how does it carry weight internationally across international borders?
Well, a community trademark covers the whole of the European community.
Oh, okay, okay. So it's a European,
right,
based trademark. So, I mean, if I was in Asia, would it carry more weight than a federal trademark in the United States?
No, about the same.
About the same, okay. But
right.
At least it protects you in Europe, in the European Union, and then a federal trademark. So if you had both a European trademark through a community trademark and a federal trademark here in the United States, you're pretty golden.
You're pretty covered, because if you look at the people who are the panelists for WIPO,
they're covered in all those countries.
Right.
Yeah, you very rarely have somebody from anywhere else.
Right. Yeah, I haven't seen too many, to be perfectly honest. I assume there's definitely some folks from Africa, and I know there's I've actually never filed any of the African trademarks, but they're out there, and there's nothing wrong with using them.
What about Asia? Anything that covers over there?
There are some Asian trademarks. You have to file directly, as far as I know. I'm not the expert on filing in Asia either. We do have other people in the office who've done that a lot more than myself.
And given that you have a lot of Middle Eastern clients, what's the rules down there? That must be kind of that must vary a lot.
There is a combined filing over there, and I think there's five different countries. It covers Kuwait, Qatar, Oman, KSA, Bahrain, and Emirates.
Bahrain. Okay, so it covers the Middle Eastern Arab countries.
Right. It's one application for six member states.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I've actually only filed that once. And honestly, I'm sure people over there are filing them all the time, but, you know, you have to be an expert. You can't be an expert in every single area.
Right, right. Well, that's great. Well, it's been a great pleasure having you, Stephen. I didn't know we'd be able to eat up the whole hour with you.
Well,
we've been able to do
pleasure.
So. And it's amazing, because our first show we were like, you know, how is this domain law so interesting? And there's so many things going on with the different changes with the WIPO decisions that are happening, and the cases like you just had with Kiwi.com, and Joan John had a couple of famous cases occur, and so did Ari Goldberger, and the whole sex.com case, and how it was determined that the domain name is now property, and that you can definitely have a property value assigned to it.
Right. Well, that's only in the Ninth Circuit, or here.
Right. Only in the Ninth Circuit, but still, at least it's established somewhere.
That's true.
And then with the whole ICANN changes in policy with the new transfer out policy, and there's a lot of things to cover. That's why we feel it's important that we cover our bases and covering this issue with domain law on a regular basis, because it's not only interesting, but it's important as we get into this new industry of domain names, that we are covering ourselves, we're protecting our assets, and that we're looking at all angles to be successful so that we all can work together and be safe from people that are and companies that are not on the same page.
Absolutely.
So I really appreciate your time. I'd love to have you on again in a, you know, in a month or so, and would welcome any other topics that you'd like to talk about.
Well, thank you very much, Monty.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and thanks to everyone that's been listening. Thank you to our sponsors, and join us next week. We're going to have a great show again on Webmaster Radio, and Domain Masters will be on every Wednesday at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Please give me some feedback, Monty@moniker.com. Talk to me in the chat room for a couple minutes after the show. Give me some more suggestions. We'll try and get as many people on as possible to make this show very useful for you and valuable. Thanks again, and see you next week.